You are Locked On Giants, your daily New York Giants podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to Locked On Giants, your daily podcast on the New York Giants, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Ed Valentine of Big Blue View, joined as always by Patricia Traina of The Athletic, Forbes, Big Blue View, and several other places. Today we're previewing the Monday Night Football matchup between the Giants and the Atlanta Falcons. We'll break down the show today into different segments. The way we usually do these preview shows is we talk offense, defense, and special teams. So that is what we will do. Patty, how are you today?
I'm great, Ed. I'm ready for some Monday Night Football.
There you go. You know, for a bad football team, the Giants sure do seem to be getting a lot of national audiences lately.
Well, you know, the schedule, of course, is set back in April, and this is before they even play it down. But, you know, certainly a lot of star appeal on the Giants. You have, you know, Beckham, you have Saquon Barkley, you know, Eli Manning, even though people are debating whether or not Eli is losing his star appeal. So certainly, you know, a lot of reasons to still tune in on a national basis every once in a while on the Giants, even though they're not quite playing their best football of late.
Oh, that's kind of putting it mildly, Patty, but you know, it's interesting because you and I were both in the locker room, you know, during the week, and the Giants are still, and you don't know at this point if they're trying to convince themselves, but I think there's still some belief in that locker room that perhaps, you know, whether they can make the playoffs or not, that seems to be a pipe dream, but I think there's still a belief that they can play some good football, you know, between now and the end of the season. And maybe tonight will tell us a little bit about that.
Absolutely. The Giants, and it's imperative that the Giants win tonight, that they win their next game, which is against Washington at home, and go into their bye week with a 3-5 record. Certainly a lot easier to climb out of a hole from a 3-5 record than it is a 1-7 record. So they must start playing good football, and they have to turn this around.
Patty, let's start our discussion, our first segment of today's show. We'll talk about the offense, and the place we have to start is the latest shuffle on the Giants offensive line. The news broke over the weekend that Patrick Omame signed to a 3-year, $15 million contract during the offseason will be benched, and that John Greco will move from center to right guard to replace Omame, and Spencer Pulley, who was awarded to the Giants on waivers at the beginning of the season, will move in as the starting center. I think, you know, my perspective on this, I think, is that it was inevitable, I think, that Omame get replaced because he simply hasn't played as well as the Giants had hoped he would.
Right. You know, Omame was added to the injury report Saturday with I think it was a knee injury. And he, in fact, was downgraded to out. So he didn't even make the trip down to Atlanta with the team. But you're absolutely right. You know, once the Giants pulled Eric Flowers out of the lineup, they continue to have struggles on that right side. And you know, to be fair to Omame, he was a career, I think he played most of his career on the left side, and they asked him to move over to the right side next to a right tackle in Flowers in the beginning of the season who had never played on that side, next to a fairly new center in John Jalapio, and then later John Greco, who, as you said, is not a center. He's a guard. So the circumstances certainly weren't in his favor, but with that said, you know, you have to overcome those circumstances. You have to, you know, whether it be studying more, whether it be paying more attention to your technique or whatever the case may be, you have to find a way. You're out there for a reason, because presumably you are one of the best five guys out there. And Omame, unfortunately, just couldn't get it done, and now he's headed to the bench. And, you know, it's a move, quite frankly, that I think is a little overdue, because we at Inside Football which is another place I write for. We've been talking about this now for several weeks, about how John Greco, he's a very good offensive lineman, but he is not a center. And I think today, Rich Baldinger and his Baldy breakdowns actually pointed out, you know, the differences and the mistakes and the protection and the line calls and whatnot. And you don't know if that's on Greco or on Eli or whatnot, but certainly, you know, now moving Greco back to the position for which he is a better fit and putting a legitimate center in there, a guy who has started at that position and who has done it, can only hopefully help the Giants moving forward.
Patty, I think you're right about that. I mean, John Greco is a player, an 11-year veteran, who obviously understands the Pat Shurmur offense, but Greco spent most of his career playing guard, so this move will put him back at his natural position. You know, Spencer Pulley can play both guard and center, but is a natural center, so this position switch makes sense. You know, the thing about Omame that I need to say is he probably is a better player on the left side of the line, but if you look at his career, he did play quite a bit on the right side in 2014, and he spent an entire year playing on the right side in 2015. So he has been familiar with that side. It wasn't like it was something that he had never done. But, you know, obviously he simply to this point hadn't lived up to that contract. I don't think the Giants expected to get an all-pro kind of a player, you know, when they signed Patrick Omame, but they expected to get a solid, you know, veteran pro, you know, who could hold his own. And the problems have simply continued, and really it all centers around that right side of the offensive line. And at this point, the Giants, this was really one of the few options that they had, you know, putting Spencer Pulley into the lineup. For me, the notion that it should have happened sooner is probably correct, but you have to understand also that you're asking Spencer Pulley to play center, and he was acquired in week one of the season. So you want to put a guy in at center, you have to make sure he knows all the line calls, he knows the offense, he's comfortable with everything that, you know, that Eli Manning might check to. So perhaps it was just a case of, you know, we can't put this guy into the lineup until we're sure, you know, that he's comfortable with everything that needs to be called.
Absolutely, and that's a very good point, you know, and I'll tell you what scares me, though, about tonight's game. Right now, the Giants, with Omame at home, you know, nursing that knee injury, they are thin right now on that offensive line, because I think they have Brian Mihelic, who is a tackle, who they brought up, and I'm trying to think, Spencer Pulley, yeah, I'm looking at the depth chart, Evan Brown, who is a rookie center. I think he played at SMU, and they've been, you know, training him to play at guard. But if they have enough, you know, God forbid they have an injury on that line, I'm not sure how they're going to shuffle it.
Well, it is what it is, and we cross our fingers, and we hope that, you know, that we don't have any injuries tonight. I think offensively, Patty, let's talk about a couple of other things. The Giants do get some good news tonight. They get Evan Engram and Rhett Ellison, their top two tight ends, back. I think that they should be particularly excited about the idea of having Engram back in the lineup, you know, simply because he has a skill set that not a lot of tight ends in the NFL have, and he creates matchup issues that should help the Giants to free up, you know, Sterling Shepard and Odell Beckham on the outside and get them some opportunities.
Absolutely. I agree with you. And, you know, you speak about opportunities. I really, really like the matchup that Sterling Shepard is going to have when he moves to the slot. He's going up against Brian Poole, who is the Falcons slot cornerback. And Poole has struggled this year. I think I actually broke this matchup down for The Athletic, and that should be out, I think. If it's not out now, it should be out shortly. but he has struggled in slot coverage. And Sterling Shepard has quietly had himself a good season, not just as a slot receiver, but also on the outside. He's just, you know, really stepped into that offense and flourished. So I'm looking forward to that matchup.
Patty, I'll tell you one of the other things that I'm looking forward to and one of the things that I'm actually hoping for. You know, we look at Saquon Barkley, and he has an opportunity Monday night to tie the NFL record for consecutive, you know, 100-plus yard from scrimmage games at the start of an NFL career. He's got six in a row. Kareem Hunt is the only player with seven. And for me, the absolutely amazing thing about Barkley's, you know, 100-plus yards from scrimmage streak isn't that he's done it, and it isn't even that a lot of the yards that he's got in the running game have been on his own, which basically pretty much every single yard he's gotten running the football has been pretty much on his own. But the amazing thing to me is that I still don't believe that the Giants have used him incredibly well in the passing game. And most of what they've done with him in the passing game has been checkdowns and dump offs and, you know, throwing the ball to Barkley when Eli has not felt like he had other options. I'm looking forward to the time when the Giants actually begin to split him out more, to use more wheel routes, to actually design plays that are intended to get the ball to Barkley as a pass receiver. And I'm hoping to see that tonight.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. You know, I think I saw a statistic that more than half of Barkley's receptions, and he's got 40, I believe, but more than half have been of the check down and short yardage variety. And you know, you're absolutely right. I mean, we saw it in the spring. We saw it in the summer, how they would split him out wide and isolate him against a linebacker. And it was just no contest. And it was like, it just left you wanting to see more. And we haven't seen that. And, you know, I just don't understand why.
I don't really understand it yet either, Patty. You know, it could be, you know, that Pat Shurmur has been sort of holding some things back because he hasn't been really trusting the protection, trusting the blocking, things like that. I'm not really sure, you know, but I'm hoping to see more of that tonight. This is a defense, you know, with Atlanta, and I don't have the numbers exactly in front of me, but this is a struggling defense. This is a defense that I think only has 10 sacks on the year, you know, doesn't have a prolific pass rush. This is really a defense that the Giants, we talk so much about them getting the ball down the field, about creating big plays. This is a defense where the Giants should have opportunities to make plays.
Absolutely. It's a Falcons defense that has been banged up. And as you mentioned, you know, they haven't had the firepower that they might have had, you know, if they had all their starters. I think they're missing two key guys from their defensive secondary, and they've had to move guys around. So there are plays to be made against this defense. It's just a matter of, A, will the offensive line, this latest reshuffle, protect Eli long enough? Will it do better in run blocking? You know, because the run blocking of late has just, you know, not been as sharp as you'd like it to see. And above all, you can't have mistakes by the receivers. You can't have guys running, you know, rounding out their routes or their routes. You can't have them dropping passes. So the Giants are going to need to play mistake-free football. They're going to need to be crisp with their execution. And they're just going to need to, you know, somehow find a way to put together drives and sustain them.
Patty, let's take our first break for a word from our sponsors, and we will come back and we will turn our attention to the Giants defense. Giants fans, let's talk about advice. Patty and I are always being asked for it, but one thing we can't do is tell you who is going to win or lose the games. If you think you know, you've got to check out MyBookie. MyBookie has been in business for years, has great online reviews, and offers an easy-to-use mobile site. You win, MyBookie pays. It's that simple. Join now, and MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar. Wait until after 7 p.m. Eastern Time, and MyBookie will give you an extra $25 free play on deposits of more than $100. Visit MyBookie online today. That's MyBookie. And don't forget to enter the promo code LOCKEDON25 to activate this special offer for our listeners. With MyBookie, you play, you win, you get paid. Okay, Giants fans, Ed Valentine and Patricia Traina back here on Locked On Giants, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We are breaking down the Monday night football game between the Giants and the Atlanta Falcons, which comes up later on this evening. So, Patty, we talked about the offense a little bit. Let's turn our attention to the Giants' defense. Very interesting conversation with defensive coordinator James Betcher earlier in the week, or just a few days ago. And it was interesting to listen to Betcher talk about really how it's not about the matchup against the Falcons. It's not about Julio Jones or Matt Ryan or anything that the Falcons do. You know, the Giants haven't played well defensively of late. I think they've given up a total of 100 points in their last three games. And he really said that it's about the Giants doing their jobs better. And I absolutely have to agree with Betcher in that assessment.
Absolutely. I agree with him as well. You know, you've got to, you know, you watch the Giants defense and they definitely have guys, you know, that can get the job done. But what you're also seeing is you're seeing guys failing to get off blocks. You're seeing guys missing tackles or doing these lame tackles in which they're being dragged down the field for extra yards. You're seeing, you know, guys in the defensive secondary either miss or drop interceptions or, you know, take poor angles. These are all things that can be cleaned up, but, you know, so far we haven't seen it yet. And, you know, you mentioned what Betcher said. He talked about how, you know, when he sat down with with his players after they returned from the long weekend, he said, this is what, you know, we see you can do better. And he said he went through that with every unit and in some cases with individuals. So we'll see if his little pep talk, if you will, has a positive effect. But, yeah, the defense needs to somehow find its teeth and start making those plays.
You know, Patty, it's interesting. I don't think that particular, you know, what you referred to as a pep talk, that wasn't done, you know, in a finger-pointing way. I think that was done in a, you know, in a unit by unit, you know, these are the mistakes that we're making. These are the areas that we need to be better. One of the things that happened last year, I think, was that it became a finger-pointing thing where it was, you aren't doing your job and you aren't doing your job and this guy's not doing his job. And I think that this was done in a more constructive way that said, you know, we have the ability to get these things done. You know, we just need to be a little bit cleaner in our assignments. We need to be a little bit cleaner in our tackling. You know, we need to be a little bit cleaner in making sure that we fill the gaps that we're supposed to fill, you know, and do the things that our defense requires.
Exactly. You know, if each guy does his job, then everything will fall into place. And I think what might also be happening is, you know, some guys might see that, oh, this guy can't get off his block, so now I've got to abandon my assignment to go over and do his assignment. And when you start doing that and you create that kind of chaos, it's never going to end happily for you. So, you know, that's why Betcher, you know, and that's a very good point you made about him, you know, doing it in a constructive manner, because, you know, when you start pointing fingers and you start calling guys out, you know, and embarrassing them in front of their peers, that's not going to get anything done. And I really like, you know, the approach Betcher seemed to have taken. I spoke to a couple players about it and they said, look, We're all men here. We're all big boys. There's nothing wrong with constructive criticism, and that's what the coach is there for. And, you know, similarly, they said that they were able to give him feedback about, you know, some of what was going on. You know, how can we get better together? And that is so big, and it's probably one of the most underrated aspects of what Betcher's trying to do is, you know, this isn't a one-sided conversation. It's how can we, as a defense, including the coaches, help you to get better, and how can we do our jobs better to, you know, so that you flourish in the system.
Patty, I think that while we're talking about the Giants defense, I think we need to talk about two players. And I think one is in a positive light and one is, you know, a player who's been struggling. I think that first let's talk about Olivier Vernon. You know, we finally saw Vernon in a game, you know, in week 6 against the Philadelphia Eagles. And it was a reminder of just how good a football player Olivier Vernon is. I mean, he was utterly dominant in the first defensive series or two. And I know you and I were sitting, you know, you were sitting in the press box, and we quickly saw the Eagles adjust their blocking to make sure that they had, you know, two players assigned to block Vernon. You know, it was just a reminder of what the Giants missed for 5 weeks. And, you know, for all of the complaining and the gnashing of teeth and, oh, he's a bust because he couldn't get on the field and all of this and that, it was just a reminder that this is a very, very good football player who can really help this defense.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we saw for the first time this year an opposing team put two guys on one Giants defender. We haven't really seen that this year. Vernon brought that to the table. And, you know, look, I get it. People want, you know, it's funny. Fans want results. They have high expectations. But you've got to remember what kind of player Vernon is and what his role is. And, you know, people will sit there and say, oh, the guy is overpaid. But what they don't look at is, you know, the pressures or the plays that he forces to maybe another teammate to make. I mean, if you break all that down, you then start to appreciate even more the value that he brings when he's on the field. Now, the big thing is he has to be on the field. He's off that high ankle sprain, you know, that came off the injury report. Now, this week he was on the injury report with a rib issue, but, you know, the good news is he was taken off and he made the trip down to Atlanta and he will play tonight. But, you know, that's going to be the key, is keeping that guy as healthy as possible so that he can really unleash what he is capable of doing.
Patty, let's talk about the other player that I think we need to touch on, and this one is in a different light. I think we need to talk about Janoris Jenkins a little bit. Jenkins had a really rough game, you know, against the Eagles, and you know, under most circumstances or at times in the past, you would have thought, oh, okay, the Giants will take Jackrabbit and put him on Julio Jones and have him shadow Jones. Unfortunately, though, you know, I don't think that Jackrabbit, the way he's played this year, I don't think he's earned the right to shadow a player like that. And he should still be the Giants, you know, talent-wise, reputation-wise, he should be their best corner. But to this point in the season, you know, he just hasn't played nearly as well as we've seen him in the past.
No, he hasn't, and you know, I don't want to use this as an excuse for him, but you know, he had the off-season issues with his brother. I mean, you wonder how much of that is affecting him. I know people say, okay, look, he's paid to show up and do a job, and he'll probably say the same thing, but you have to be made of stone not to have that on your mind. I just don't see how you can't have it on your mind. And you know, the other thing is Jenkins frustrated by the losing? I mean, I've had people say to me on Twitter, oh, you know, Jenkins has checked out, you know, move on from him. You know, Betcher was asked about Jenkins and his struggles, and he said, look, you know, not everything is how it appears. You know, you might see it one way and I'll see it a different way. And, you know, to be fair, you know, you'd have to really sit down and break down some of these long plays that he's given up. You know, did he stumble? Was the safety help late, or, you know, what happened? But, you're right. There was a time when he was a shutdown corner for this team, and we just haven't seen that. And, you know, you can blame some of that on maybe missed assignments or breakdowns in the defense, but not all of it. There's some of it's got to be on Jenkins, and, you know, it's a little bit too much, I think, compared to like a couple years ago when he was just, you know, I mean, teams just didn't throw at him.
No, they didn't, Patty. And, you know, there are always times when you look at a pass that gets completed, especially a longer pass, and you blame whoever happens to be the defender who happens to be the closest. And yet, you know, when you know the scheme, when you know what the coverage was supposed to be, that may not actually be the person who was assigned to be there. He may have just recognized a mistake and be trying to cover for someone else, you know, and be the guy who happens to get closest, so he gets blamed. And there could be some of that going on. You know, we don't know every call and every assignment and all of that, but I think it's pretty clear, you know, all in all, that Jackrabbit hasn't played, you know, to the level that he's capable of playing. And hopefully, you know, hopefully beginning tonight, you know, we'll see that, because the Giants defense, you know, with Jackrabbit playing the way that he can, you know, is different in the secondary.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they need him. If they're going to have any chance of turning this around and cruising into a 3-5 record by the bye week, they need Jenkins to step up and play like he can play.
All right, Patty, let's take our second break for another word from our sponsors. We'll come back. We'll talk about special teams, where there's a little bit of interesting Giants news, and we'll offer some final thoughts heading into the Monday Night Football matchup against the Atlanta Falcons.
Hey, Giant fans, is your company looking for a new way to reach customers? Well, your company could be mentioned right now, right here on the Locked On Giants podcast. Podcast listeners are 60% more likely to interact with sponsors they hear on their favorite podcasts. Our demographics is 98% male, with more education and earning than traditional media audiences. Have your company sponsor this podcast. For more information on our very affordable advertising rates, email lockedongiantspodcast@gmail.com.
Okay, Giants fans, Ed Valentine and Patricia Traina here on Locked On Giants, your daily podcast for the New York Giants, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We are breaking down the Giants-Falcons Monday night football game, and we'll turn our attention now to special teams. And Patty, once again on Monday night, the Giants will have a new kick returner. This is what, maybe the 700th kickoff returner that they've had this season?
Whew, it sure seems that way, doesn't it? I mean, it's rough sledding here. It just seems like every kick returner, every punt returner they put in there struggles or ends up getting hurt. And, you know, let's hope that Quadri Henderson, who is the newcomer we speak of, he was elevated from the practice squad to the 53-man roster on Sunday. So let's hope that he breaks that streak.
I certainly hope so, Patty. And, you know, just to recap, the Giants, you know, had a competition in the preseason between Hunter Sharp and Khalif Raymond and decided to go with neither. They brought in Kalen Clay. Kalen Clay came and went and struggled. They brought in Stacy Coley. You know, he's gone. They've used Cody Latimer in that role. He's on IR. They've used Jawill Davis, and he'll be out with a concussion this week, which is the thing that necessitated, you know, bringing up Quadri Henderson from the practice squad. We've seen Odell Beckham on punt returns the last couple of weeks, and, you know, it just hasn't worked. And I have to admit, you know, when the Giants brought Quadri Henderson to the practice squad 2 or 3 weeks ago, that's a move I was excited about. I've been looking forward to watching this young man. He's, you know, he's a smallish guy. I think he's like 5'8", 190. But he was a highly, highly successful punt and kickoff returner at Pitt, you know, as a college player. I'm excited to see, you know, what this young man, you know, can do for the Giants in the return game.
I am as well. I really, really applauded that move. I was actually surprised that Henderson was out there, but I'm glad the Giants got him, and I'm very much looking forward to seeing what he can bring to the table. I know, you know, it's interesting. When Davis showed up on the injury report, a couple people said to me, well, does that mean Corey Coleman, who the Giants signed this week, was going to be brought up? And I didn't think that would be the case because, you know, look, usually the Giants – at least so far, they rarely bring somebody in from the practice squad who they just signed. They usually give the guy a couple of weeks to become acclimated. So Henderson made all the sense in the world. And, you know, the job, I think, is his to keep now.
I would hope so. I mean, you know, I feel bad for Jawil Davis a little bit. Although, you know, I think the Giants are telling you that they like this young man, you know, by the idea that they did not put him on IR with the concussion, you know, which they could have easily done. I think they like what they see from him. He did a really good job the last couple of weeks on kickoff return. I think against the Eagles, I think he averaged 29 yards per return. So I think he's a player that they like. But I'm really looking forward to seeing, you know, what Henderson can do. You know, as much as you know, when the season started, I think we thought we would see Odell Beckham on punt returns. And I don't blame the Giants for putting him back there at all. I think that, you know, you take your best players and you give them opportunities. It's just really not working out. No matter what the Giants do on punt return, they're last in the league. I think they're averaging less than 3 yards per punt return. So hopefully Henderson can give them a little bit of a boost. And it's interesting, too, that you mentioned Corey Coleman, because I really kind of forgot about that at the top of the show. Let's actually talk about that signing for a second. You know, Pat Shurmur was asked about Coleman, and he, you know, Coleman's a guy who's had a couple of different stops. He's had some struggles. You know, his work ethic and his attitude have been questioned, you know, in Cleveland and Buffalo, and he lasted about a week in New England before he got cut. But he's a former first-round pick. He was taken 15th in the draft. He's a guy with talent. And to be honest with you, you know, when you're 1-5, when you were 3-13 a year ago, there's absolutely no harm in taking a flyer on a guy like this and seeing if he can mature and if they can get him on the field in a few weeks and if he can help them.
Absolutely. I mean, and they're being smart about it, because right now the Giants don't exactly have gobs and gobs of cap space, and they're not even halfway through the season. So they're going to need to keep some money available for in-season emergencies. And by taking a flyer on Corey Coleman, you know, you bring him in, you're paying him a lot less as a practice squatter than you would if he were on the 53-man roster. You're letting him become acclimated to the offense, to the organization and the culture. And then you can make a decision, you know, do you go ahead with him? Do you, you know, part ways with him? So I really like the, you know, it's one of those low risk, high reward gambles that this team is taking. And I think it's, you know, it's a smart move.
It's also a deal, Patty, where, you know, Coleman, I reached out to Mary Kay Cabot, who's the Cleveland Browns beat writer for the Cleveland Plain Dealer. And she was honest with me about some of his work ethic and his attitude issues, you know, in Cleveland. And I think those kind of, you know, reared their ugly heads when he was traded to Buffalo this summer as well. You know, on the practice squad for 2 or 3 weeks or whatever, that gives the Giants an opportunity to judge if he's learned anything from, you know, from those previous stops. It gives them an opportunity to get to know him a little bit and to find out if he's a guy they can work with. And, you know, if you find out that he's learned some things, that he's grown from those experiences a little bit, then you might have yourself a player. And if not, you know, moving on, you know, from a practice squad player is just not a big deal.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like I said, it's a low risk, high reward type of proposition. I mean, it's the type of thing you want to find out about. And, you know, here's the other thing. If the Giants do ultimately end up out of the race, and you know, I know some people are saying, well, they're out of it now, but, you know, mathematically, they're still in it. So now you kind of get a jump start on next year. You say, okay, is Corey Coleman a guy that, you know, maybe we want to devote a roster spot to, and maybe he becomes that third receiver that, you know, they've been having a revolving door with, you know? So there's a method to the madness here, and it's just something that they owe themselves to. You know, they do their due diligence, and if Coleman finally shows that he's grown up and he's ready to embrace being an NFL player, I mean, it can be a big, big boom for the Giants.
Yes, it can, Patty. I want to do this right now. I kind of want to look at tonight's game and offer, you know, my own sort of final thoughts on where the Giants are tonight and where they might be, you know, for the rest of the season. I look at tonight as a really interesting game because I'm interested to see, you know, how the Giants bounce back from getting basically embarrassed at home by the Philadelphia Eagles. I actually thought, you know, for the couple of games prior to that, Pat Shurmur likes to say that he thinks the Giants have been on a good path, you know, that he thinks that things are trending in the right direction, you know, basically. And prior to the Philadelphia game, despite, you know, whatever the one loss record is or was, I thought there was some merit to that argument. Now at 1-5, I'm really interested to see, you know, what Giants team shows up on Monday night. Do they play hard? Do they come out and are they enthusiastic? Do they attack this game and really go after it? I mean, whether or not there's any legitimate chance for them to make the playoffs and in this NFC East where, you know, teams appear to be bound and determined, you know, to wind up with somebody winning this division at 8-8 or 9-7 at the most. You know, who knows? But I still look at it, if they play well tonight, if they happen to win tonight, I think they can be optimistic that they can do some good things over the final 9 games, that they can get themselves pointed in the right direction, that they can look back at this year when it's over with and feel like they've moved in a good direction. If they come out tonight and put up a stinker and don't give any effort at all, you know, then I think we really have a problem.
Absolutely. I mean, look, let's call it what it is. This year, despite what I think management said, despite the expectations, it's a transition year. I won't quite call it a rebuilding year because a rebuilding year would mean basically tearing everything down and starting from scratch. They're in a state of transition now, and whether you agree with it or disagree with it, that's where they're at. And I think, you know, you make an excellent point. Which Giants team is going to show up? And if we see the team that, you know, just struggles and just does everything wrong, then I think, you know, they're going to basically seal their fate in terms of, you know, Gettleman's going to tear the roster apart and just, you know, fix it up and hopefully get them right back on track. But he needs to see something. You know, we need to see something. And right now we're seeing a team that, you know, has just been all over the place. Will we see a team that beat the Texans, or are we going to see the team, you know, that we saw a couple nights ago, you know, 2 weeks ago on that Thursday night home loss to the Eagles? So you're right. This is a gut check time for the Giants.
And, Patty, we only have to wait a few more hours to find out which Giants team we're going to see. So, with that said, Giants fans, thank you for listening. We will be back tomorrow to give you our views on whatever happens tonight in the Monday Night Football contest. We thank you for listening to Locked On Giants, your daily Giants podcast. Find us on Twitter at @LockedOn_Giants. You can find me at @BigBlueView. And @Valentine_Ed on Twitter. You can find Patty @Patricia_Trina on Twitter. All right, Giants fans, we'll talk to you tomorrow.